You're listening to Trust Me, You're Broke. I'm your host, Julia, a millennial consultant in banking, here to give you some tips and tricks on how to make, save, and grow your money. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Said I'll be back, and I'm back. And today, I'm going to discuss a concept that I think you've seen on headlines a lot recently, and that is the term inflation. But don't just take it from me. Let's hear what the experts say.
No, it's not your imagination. Prices are up, way up. Used cars are now selling for about the same price as a new car.
So this typical car would be, you know what, I think you're looking at $2,000 more.
And it's not just cars, lumber, groceries, gas prices.
So there you have it. That was CBC News discussing inflation. And although the guy's intonation is a little bit interesting, there are multiple news sources that confirm that Canada and the entire world is going through massive inflation rates. So starting with the definition of inflation really quickly, if you search Google, the term inflation basically means the rising prices of everything and the declining purchase power for the same value of money that you have. Now, the Central Bank in Canada has a range when it comes to inflation rate that is considered controlled, and that's 1 to 3%. This year, we have seen a preliminary inflation rate of around 3.6%, the highest in its decade. Now, you hear this term being thrown out a lot, right? The word inflation, but I feel like it's worth sitting down and discussing what that actually means for the regular person like ourselves, because there are a lot of implications, and this is why it's on the news a lot. The general consensus of the media outlet and kind of the tone that they're setting is that there is a general concern for how quickly we're going to see inflation's rise. We are concerned that inflation is going to overheat. And the definition of overheating is when inflation rises above, well above 3%, which is above that range that I mentioned, and it is a sustained inflation. Now, whether or not this inflation in the post-COVID world is actually going to end up being inflation or deflation, is it going to sustain, is it going to be short-term or long-term, that's pretty much up for debate. But I think there's much consensus in the media outlets and the banks out there just voicing their concerns about the uncertainty of the future and what we're experiencing now. All right, now that we know exactly what inflation means and kind of the inflation rate that we're seeing today, let's break this down into layman terms. Let's stop talking financial terms. And, you know, you don't want me talking like a central bank. So let's break it down and see what's relevant really for all of us. Now, the first and foremost effect of inflation that is most often overlooked is the fact that it erodes your purchasing power. As an example, maybe last year you were able to buy a bag of avocados for $5. This year, you would not be able to do that because of inflation. So the most common effect of inflation, obviously, the word inflation suggests that the prices go up. So with all commodities, with all things that you are purchasing as a regular consumer, the prices will go up. So if you are going out for dinner, you will notice that your menu items have gone up in price, probably because the ingredients that take up that menu costs more for the restaurant now. Regular grocery shopping, gas is crazy inflated right now. So in every aspect of life, you will see small increases in prices. Now, just looking at one isolated price or one isolated event, you would think, not a big deal. You know, it does strain the wallet a bit more, but it's not like a deal breaker of any sort. But if you look at the long-term ramifications of inflation, which every year there's steady rise in prices, then it's very significant. So to give you an example, in 1991, if you saved $10,000 today, that $10,000 would be worth a mere $5,500. So nearly half of the value of your $10,000 gets wiped off in the span of 30 years just because you saved it in your savings account. And this is why you will see a lot of money mentors, including myself, preaching the idea of making your money work for you and investing. Now, don't get me wrong, I am really not an advocate of short-term investing. I really hate the idea of encouraging people to invest when they are uncomfortable. So For instance, investing in stocks that are beyond your risk tolerance, I think, is a very unhealthy way of investing. So don't get me wrong. But with that said, there are lots of ways and vehicles that you can invest your money. It doesn't actually have to be just the stock market. You can invest in things like precious metals, which is gold, which traditionally is a very, very stable investment, not high returns. However, it is stable. You can invest in government bonds. You can invest in guaranteed investment certificates. You know, there's different ways to mitigate your risk tolerance, but it's better than to just put it in your savings account and wait for some very, very, very minimal interest rate to help you, because over time, your money will lose value to inflation. So this is perhaps the most overlooked when it comes to building wealth, right? Most people think make more money, save more, but if you just save over time, your money is going to, like I said in my example, in the 30-year time frame, you can see that your money will be worth half of what it was. Now, for that same time period, had you invested, as an example, then assuming an S&P 500 average rate of return of around 8%, you would have today $105,000, right? So which one are you going to choose, $5,500 or $105,000, right? Now, here's the ironic part of inflation. The ironic part of inflation is that when media and politicians and all these people start talking about the idea of inflation, like, oh, inflation is about to come, etc., what happens is the general public start to panic. They think, okay, so sometime in the future, a near future, I'm not going to be able to afford as much as I can today. So what's the natural next step for the regular consumer is to purchase now. So what happens is, because there is sort of a promise that sometime in the near future, you're not going to be able to afford as much as you can today, and interest rates for any type of loan will probably rise, people are scrambling to buy now. That is why in the news, when there are threats of inflation and hyperinflation, which is, you know, considered beyond 3%, which is what we're expecting to see this year, especially post-pandemic, what starts to happen is people start to buy up. The same way people started to buy up toilet paper for no ass reason when the pandemic first started. Like, why? Why, by the way? Let me just digress for a second. Why, by the way, was toilet paper the choice that people were going to hoard? Like, out of everything, bottled water, I don't know, like medicine, like Advil, you had so much you could hoard. But no, the one thing that you decided to hoard was toilet paper. And there had to be, like, I don't know, a small group of people, like-minded, I quote unquote geniuses, I guess, who decided that that was a good idea. And then, like, you know, great leadership led the whole herd into this frenzy of buying toilet paper for no reason. But anyway, I am done with that digression, but that really shows human psychology, and it's the same exact type of psychology with inflation. So that's why in the news today, along with the news of inflation, you will probably see things like housing wars, okay? Housing bidding wars are crazy these days. People are just bidding $200K over asking price and still losing out on the bidding war, especially here in Canada where real estate is just insane. You will also see news of used cars being incredibly expensive, like the audio clip that I just shared. You know, everything is going to cost more. Why? Because there's more demand, right? Everyone's trying to stock up now. And because they're stocking up now, what happens? There's even more of an inflation, right? Because that demand, that rise in demand, also rises the prices. So in a way, we have this idea of inflation, and then consumer behavior drives a part of that inflation to go even further. And so a quick commentary on what does that mean for us? You know, is our income and our purchasing power really going to be drastically affected this year? My answer is probably not. This type of an inflation was very foreseeable. I think that it was very predictable given that, you know, not a lot of people had the power to even spend, even if they wanted to, because it was a pandemic and a lot of sources of spending were, you know, suspended. So people couldn't go out and eat, people couldn't travel, they couldn't go anywhere other than grocery stores, really. So because of that, prices went down. You know, a lot of stores were trying to offer some type of sale or deal to keep their business running. And then now that everything is opening up again and people are now able to go and experience normal people things, you know, there's going to be a sudden surge of spending, right? People who wanted to go traveling can now go traveling in certain areas. You know, shopping malls are open again. And you can eat out now. So naturally, there will be a natural inflation in prices. And then not to mention, you know, all these businesses who lost out on business in the last year, year and a half, now they have an opportunity to cover their overhead costs, you know, the costs that they incurred despite not having any business. So naturally, they will also up the prices of their offerings. And so in a way, this was very, very predictable. When something crashes that hard, I mean, it's only natural that it recovers, right? So I wouldn't say it's necessarily a 3% inflation on, you know, whatever we already had in the norm. It was more like we had a dip and now it's going back, it's recovering. And the same way the stock market, you know, a lot of people like to go on social media and like to brag at the fact that they made so much money off the stock market and try to teach you how to, you know, invest in stocks and stuff. But the reality is, March 2020, the stock market crashed very, very hard. And the reality is the stock market is also in the process of recovering. And so it is a very bullish market. Naturally, it has nothing to do with, you know, the person that is actually investing. Had you invested in March 2020, and I say this about my investing as well, timing was everything. And if you got in at the right time, you're bound to win. It's the same thing, right? Now that time has passed and all these restrictions are easing, it is natural that we will see some sort of inflation. So I wouldn't say, you know, the banks call it transitory, which means it's not here to stay for a long time. It's probably just a short-term symptom of us getting out of this pandemic, which I think is a good thing. And now also the thing that will be impacted as a result of this type of inflation is it's going to be harder for you to get a loan because the interest rate will be increased. And so if you think about it, you know, this concept is actually in the absence of a central bank, in the absence of a government, it would actually, the interest rates should actually decrease. Because if you think about it, let's say you had a loan from 5 years ago, that amount of money is now worth way less today because of inflation, right? So technically, your interest rate should reflect that. And so the amount that you have to pay back should be less. But of course, central banks do not want to do that. And of course, governments have an incentive to not do that as well. So what they do is they put a cap, they try to control the amount of people that can actually borrow money and spend more because they have an incentive of not, you know, of controlling prices, right? If it was so easy for everyone to get a loan, then there would be a surge in people trying to get a loan now and trying to make big purchases now. And so in an effort to control that, what they do is they raise the interest rate. And so you will be able to see that, if not now, very soon, if the inflation rate is indeed that high. It also means that getting a mortgage for a house will be significantly more difficult at this time because they will raise the stress test or the interest rate as well. So this one they've already done in the pandemic. They actually lowered the stress test. So for those of you guys who don't know what a stress test is, make sure you go and check out one of my episodes where I talk about mortgages and getting a house. But really what it is let's say the interest rate for getting a mortgage is 2% today. How at least the Canadian government assesses your ability to get that loan is via something called a stress test. So they assess your ability to pay back this loan by assessing you on a standard interest rate. And right now, I believe if I just do a little quick check, it's probably at 4.97. Let's see, Canadian stress test right now. They just increased it. And let's see. And by the way, guys, like usually the stress test isn't decreased or increased that quickly, but okay. So I was completely wrong. The Bank of Canada qualifying rate was 4.79%. It used to be. Now in June 2021, the minimum qualifying rate increased to 5.25%. Guys, that's freaking high. Like, I'm telling you, before the pandemic, before they lowered it to 4.79, the standard was 5.17%. And that was already considered high. So this is even higher, right? So what this means is they assess your income based on this interest rate and decide on your mortgage affordability. They don't decide or factor in your mortgage affordability based on the current real actual interest rate. And this is because in the case that, you know, interest rates, for example, you have a variable rate mortgage and interest rates rises, or, you know, a pandemic happens and we have hyperinflation, in the case that you lose some of your income for whatever reason, you have to be able to still pay for your mortgage and not default, right? So in a way, this mechanism is really good because it provides that security. And it prevents massive tragedies like the 2008 housing crisis. So it's very much needed. However, for the commoner, it is now way more difficult to buy a house. So not only is it difficult for you to even afford a house in this market because of the bidding wars, because of the people who can actually afford it, now you also will have a harder time getting your mortgage approved by a lender. So these are all of the kind of circumstances that you'll have to face when there is hyperinflation or inflation of any kind. Now, with that said, let me teach you how you can overcome inflation. Inflation is very natural. It comes every single year, but it makes your life less affordable for the same amount of income and the same amount of savings that you have. So three key ways that you can overcome this. The first one is making sure that your money works for you. As I alluded to before, if you just save the money in your account, you will lose value, right? You're just losing money. You're just waiting for it to lose money over time. So besides your emergency savings, which is absolutely necessary, besides some cash, it's very necessary to have some cash. Cash is the most liquid asset, which means if anything emergency happens to you, if anything happens where you need cash immediately, obviously you want it to be accessible. So 3 to 6 months worth of emergency funds, you want to keep that in your bank account. But other than that, invest it. And like I said, there are other ways that you can mitigate your risk. If you're not a risk-loving person, that is totally fine. So for example, for someone who is more risk-seeking and also looking to invest a more long-term 20 or 30 years, then I would recommend going with, you know, US stocks, international stocks, for example, index funds. These are all investments that are worth getting into. Now, if you want to kind of balance that out, then you want to use some fixed assets. So let me just access my current portfolio with Wealthsimple right now. And someone told me that I really sound like I work at Wealthsimple. I don't, guys. I love using it because it's just so easy to understand for someone that is new to investing. But a level 6 risk out of 10, which is considered a balanced portfolio risk. And so I have one portfolio at a 6 because I want to kind of withdraw the money and use the money sometime in the next 5 years. So what I have is fixed income and gold, and as well equity, which are stocks. So 65% of my portfolio are all in stocks, aka equities. I have emerging market equities, US equities, international, Canadian, etc. And then there are fixed income, and fixed income, as it says. It gives you a fixed income no matter how the market is doing. And so these are like government bonds are the biggest way you can do this, company bonds, gold, and then a tiny bit of cash as well as a part of my portfolio. So that's what like a level 6 balanced portfolio looks like. Now, let me tell you what a level 8 risk loving portfolio looks like. So then the percentage between equity and fixed income becomes more like 80 to 20. So I have way more stocks and equities there, which means that you'll probably see higher returns, but you will also see higher dips in the shorter run. So this is better for people who, first of all, don't mind the risk, and second of all, want to invest for a longer period of time. Now, the only thing I will say is most people think they are more risk-seeking than they actually are, especially if you're a new investor. So this is something to keep in mind. Always, always have some sort of fixed income in your portfolio because you don't want to put all of your eggs in one basket. It just isn't a sound investment strategy at all. Unless you're, again, swing trading or day trading, which is just in general not recommended at all. You'll never hear me recommend it. I probably mentioned this at least once every single episode, but like it's just so not recommended. So that's number one. Make your money work for you. If you're not in investments right now, you are losing money without doing anything. Isn't that infuriating that you have all this hard-earned cash, but just because you put it into a savings account, you're losing money, right? The savings account interest rate, let me give you a context, right? Interest rate through Wealthsimple, I don't really use the savings account on Wealthsimple, but the interest rate that they're offering right now is 0.5%. Let that sink in. Inflation is over 3%, but their interest rate that they're offering you is 0.5%. So you're making 0.5% out of your money, but then you're losing over 3% of money each year. So really you're at a negative 2.5% losing money, putting it in your savings account. And you will see that with most banks, unless it's a high interest savings account or unless it's an introductory offer, you're not really going to make money in the longer run off of a savings account interest rate. So just keep that in mind and get in as soon as possible if you can. Now, the second way to overcome inflation is to negotiate your primary income. So your primary income is likely going to be a 9-to-5. If you're an entrepreneur, it's, you know, your own income from your business. So the negotiation will look a little bit different. Likely, it'll be harder for you because if you are selling physical goods as an entrepreneur, for example, your supplier or your wholesaler will probably quote you a higher price because it simply costs more, right? So you might have a harder time doing that, but the way that you can negotiate is to up your offering, up your prices. And I would recommend this for any type of business, not just entrepreneurs who are selling physical goods. Entrepreneurs, if you are providing a service, make sure you are negotiating with who, you ask. You're negotiating with yourself, and make sure that your service price is a little bit higher than it would be normally. And that's because now the money that you're getting for your time is worth less, right? So you always want to follow market rate. You don't want to always provide the same exact pricing. There are obviously two sides of the story. Number one is you don't want to jack up your prices so high above inflation rate that your clients and your consumers are going to notice and they're going to feel like it's just not worth their money anymore. However, you can create a sense of urgency for your product by saying, hey, I'm going to increase the prices in the next 3 months. Make sure you get in on the special offer, for example, right? Because as I said, the human psychology, the consumer psychology is that they're ready to spend now because they don't want to spend later. So that is one piece of, I guess, consumer psychology that you can use to offer up a more, a fairer price to these consumers for your time, your service, your product, whatever it may be. Now, for those of us who are in a 9-to-5, negotiate with your employer. Always, always, if you have a chance to negotiate, make sure you are negotiating. Each year, there should be a review of inflation and an adjustment to your pay accordingly. Usually, most employers will do this, but if they don't, then you need to raise a red flag, right? If it's a simple inflation of 1%, maybe, you know, it's less whatever. But if you think about it, it's 3%, highest inflation in so long, you want to negotiate that. Make sure you are saying, hey, the living prices in this location, especially if you're told to come back to the office, guys, this is a great opportunity. You're asking me to pay for transportation. You're asking me to come back to the office, which means that I have to live within the vicinity, which means that, you know, if I have to live in a city, it's probably more expensive. Everything is more expensive now. There is room for negotiation. Make sure you let that known. Even if they don't completely match inflation, they should have that in consideration. And usually it's not too big of a fight, honestly, because like I said, usually employers just go with it. They understand that the same exact figure can't be given for you to have the same exact quality of life. That's not possible when there's inflation and especially hyperinflation. So make sure you have those conversations. That is the best way you can adjust your primary income, which is a huge portion of the equation, right? To meet kind of the market conditions. And lastly, it has to do with purchasing. So I understand the consumer psychology behind wanting to buy now because the future is looking more expensive, but especially in the hyperinflation that they're describing this year, it is transitory. It probably will correct itself again, and the prices will go lower. You just don't want to catch yourself in the middle where, you know, there's this huge surge of demand for everything and then you're just buying prices at an all-time high. The classic one being lumber. So in Canada, lumber prices have been just atrocious. And the reason being, because a lot of people are staying home, there's a lot of home improvement projects that are happening. And so the surge of demand is really causing lumber prices to go up, right? So if you're now hearing, oh my God, there's going to be additional inflation rate, you may be tempted to now go and buy this lumber now. But if you can let it wait for a little bit, because it might come down. And especially if you're at a point where you need to make this big purchase and you need to get a loan from the bank, right now is probably not the best time to go and get a loan because you won't really get attractive interest rates to get that loan. So that's part one of this. Part two is if you're trying to buy a home right now, and you're trying to get a mortgage, right now is not the best time to get a mortgage because, like I said, the way that they are assessing your mortgage affordability, which is called the stress test, is at its all-time high right now. So not very advantageous for you. But also, if you are going to buy a house because you just plan to do it and you're in that life stage and you're all ready to go, I wouldn't worry about actual interest rates for mortgages. There are a lot of predictions out there that interest rates will likely increase throughout this year, again, as a result of inflation and rising interest rate and all of that. But you got to remember, we are still probably at the lower end of mortgage interest rates. So when the market recovers and all of that, you will still find that mortgage interest rates can continue to go up. So talk to your advisor. This is not formal advice. It's just for you to be educated on your options, but it may be good to secure whatever interest rate you have now and secure that in a fixed rate mortgage. So then for the next 5 years, when it does recover into a, you know, right now we're kind of looking at an all-time low, but if it becomes higher again, you still have a good deal over the next 5 years or 3 years or whatever the term of your mortgage is. Now, before we go, I just want to give a quick PSA. A very important reminder, and I've posted this on my Instagram account. Instagram decided that it was going to be an asshole and decided to block some of the key functionalities of a business account on my Instagram. So I had to migrate over to one of my older accounts. So now if you are interested in communicating with me, I post tips and tricks. I post stories on latest news. Today I talked about the acquisition of Slack by Salesforce. So if you are curious to see kind of what's up and coming and what's happening in real time, and you want to also get updates on my uploading schedule for my podcast, please go and follow Wealth by Jules. So it's Wealth by Jules, Jules. That's my nickname. So please go follow that, and I will see you next week.